There's no doubt about it. If you live within a few miles of where one of these bombs strike, you'll die instantly.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Shannon Larrick, and you're tuned in again to BME Radio. Today with us, we have a piercer that I actually know very little about, but he's sent me photos of some of the most radical and daring piercings on BME. For example, a pair of under-the-collarbone piercings, quite possibly the deepest, most invasive, and maybe even risky piercings ever done. And I definitely want to ask him about that at length later, but first, let's get to know him. Mark Pantalone, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Shannon. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Mark, like I said, I don't know a lot about you, so let's start by talking about how you first got interested in piercing.
Well, back in like 93, I think it was, I'm 28 now, but when I was like 15, I did like my nostril, and that was like extreme for the people. But my mom actually took me when I was 10 years old to get my ear pierced, and every year since then I was putting a different ring in my ear. And then, like I said, when I was 15, I ended up piercing my nostril in school with a safety pin, you know, the little punk stage I was going through. But then I took a break for a while. I was, like, putting more stuff in me. And then about 93, I did my nostril again. And then a friend of mine had his tongue pierced and his nipple done, and he took me to get my tongue pierced. And I won't name anybody, but the guy did, like, a real shitty job. And just, like, left the clamp hanging on my tongue. But for some reason, I enjoyed it, and I watched him, and I was totally amazed with it. And then I actually went back to him again. He had did my one nipple, lost connection, blood's pouring down my chest. But for some reason, I kept going back to the same guy, because I didn't really know much about the scene or anybody who did it. And then I let him do my eyebrow, and the only one, actually, that I still have in that he did was my tongue. But, I'm watching him, like, actually mess up on me, and I'm looking at him going, God, I know I could do better than this guy. So I just slowly picked it up from there and started reading, started getting, like, PFIQs and asking questions. I actually asked him questions, but he was kind of getting, like, cocky and pissed off, like, oh, this kid wants to get in on a deal, but he really didn't help me out. But his negative feed actually gave me more positive feed to learn more about it. And like I said, just getting, like, PFIQs and, like, body play magazines and just asking questions, and I just started mainly piercing myself, then piercing friends. And then probably like in a year later, in 94, there's a tattoo shop near me called Sick Creations, and they've actually seen some of the piercings I've done, and they came to me and asked me if I wanted a job. They're like, they didn't want to have anything to do with the piercings, but they just wanted me to come in and like do my own thing there. But I still wasn't sure about, because they had a really good reputation of tattooing, and I didn't want to go in there and just, like, start working out there and hacking people up. But I ended up, a couple months later, I had more and more people wanting me to do stuff for them, and it was kind of hard doing it out of my house. So I felt more confident, and I went there and kind of opened up my own shop inside their shop and started working out of there. And about 2.5 years ago, I moved down in the same plaza that their store's in. I moved down and opened up my own freestanding store next to them, but my store just does piercings.
But you guys are sort of linked.
Huh?
You guys are still linked, I guess?
Yeah, we're still linked. We're like brothers, right next door. Actually, they work out of my shop now. The two owners of their shop work out of my shop. I have, like, appointments only.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if it wasn't for, like, German Dave from Sick Creations, then, you know, I don't know where I'd be. I'd probably be piercing, but probably not the clientele that I have now.
Mm-hmm. But you're still, even though you were in a shop, you're still basically 100% self-taught, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was pretty much all self-taught, and like I said, just once I got into the field, I mean, I started working at their shop, and then I was like, I've never really had a tattoo, and I swore I'd never get a tattoo, and they ended up doing like my first tattoo, and it just went from there. And I started going to conventions with a couple of the guys, like flying out to Arizona, and when I was there, I was meeting, like, that's actually where I met Steve Hayworth for the first time, was like at the national convention in Arizona, and me and Steve ended up talking for like an hour about piercing, and I was just absorbing knowledge from him and just other piercers, just going to conventions and talking to them, and ended up trading off ideas back and forth. Like, I had this the guy Fish, who used to work at Green Man up in Connecticut, who actually now I got him a job for Steve, with Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Me and him ended up clicking off really good on the computer, and we met in person at conventions, and we just trade off ideas and kind of like helped each other out. But other than that, I was pretty much self-taught for everything.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're gonna play a quick song, and when we come back, I'm gonna talk to Mark about the real exciting stuff. We're gonna start talking about the deep, 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 deep piercings.
There's no doubt about it. If you live within a
few miles, all right, I'm playing the wrong song, so we're gonna talk about them right now. Mark, the collarbone piercings. Those to me sound like you're going underneath the bone. There's no illusion there, right?
No, it's definitely majorly underneath the bone. Yeah, they're on a friend of mine, PJ, about 2 years ago. He's like 6'3" and weighs like 140 pounds. He's like really bony. He's probably more than that, but he just has like these pronounced clavicle bones, and I was just like, God, we should just pierce underneath them. And he was like, no way. And I just did more research on it. And finally, one day he was like, okay, let's do them. So we just like set up an appointment, and I made up some jewelry and went to work on them.
All right, we're queued up for this next song. I hope I've got everyone excited, not about the song, but about the rest of this story. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the nitty-gritty details of it. Back with Mark. Now, Mark, you were saying that you made the jewelry yourself for the clavicle piercings. What was that jewelry?
I used monofilament only because of the flexibility, because of how deep it is and the flexing of his shoulders and the collarbone itself. I didn't want any binding up or any pressure put up against any nerves or his actual bone.
What is there in that area that you have to worry about?
Actually, there's an open pocket, believe it or not. I mean, you have, like, auxiliary arteries and, like, you have that, like, the piercing is going through, like, the subclavicle muscle, but it's, like, it's in between, it's going through, like, the subclavicle muscle, and it's in between, like, the collarbone. When it comes out, it's in between the collarbone and, like, the first rib, which is actually sets up kind of high, but, it just, there's just, like, you know, some little nerves in there, but other than that, like I said, there's, like, a space in between the muscle that kind of went into, went between, which gave him, like, pretty much no problem. Like, one hurt a little more than the other, but that was the second one, because I think he was, like, waiting for it.
And what anatomically sits below the piercing is what's separating it, if anything, from the, sort of the inner, from, you know, from your lungs and things like that you really don't want an infection traveling into?
Yeah, like I said, it's just because on the inside of your clavicle and on the outside, your clavicle is actually kind of wrapped around muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like mainly going through muscle, like the whole piercing pretty much.
So there's sort of a muscle sheath that...
Yeah.
So hopefully an infection wouldn't pass through that.
Nah, hopefully not.
Hopefully. And how did you clamp it? I mean, how is that
done? Nah, like I said, he was really skinny, so he kind of like tilted his shoulders forward, and when he did that, I could actually almost pinch my fingers together. I mean, it was a little deeper than a pinch, but I had enough where I could put like a 2-inch long needle. I did use a slightly bigger needle just so I didn't want to actually lose connection on that piercing at all. So I, like, you know, wedged up the monofilament in the back of the needle and pierced it through, and it actually went through a lot easier than I thought it was going to. It's actually going through his deep oral piercing. His mouth was a little tougher than that.
Yeah, I want to talk about that one as well later. What was the healing like?
For like the first couple of days, after I did the first one, I was like, all right, move your arms. Just to make sure, you know, he was still there. Kind of like, actually, that's the same thing with my very first surface piercing. This kid, not to go off the subject, but this kid wanted his lower spine done, and this is probably in, like, 94. Like, I haven't even done surface piercings yet, and it's like, nobody in Philly will do it. I was like, let me check out the skin. So I'm, like, feeling the skin, pinching it up. I was like, all right, here, sign the waiver. I did it on him, and as soon as I did it, I was like, all right, can you move your feet? And he was fine. And actually, that one's still...
Mark, this is embarrassing. My doorbell's ringing, so can you hold on just one sec?
Sure.
Hi, Mark. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
I forgot I had a lunch date with my mother. Anyway, so you were saying that this was your first spinal piercing. The guy signed the waiver, and away you went.
Yeah, like I said, and I was skeptical about doing it, but I kind of wanted to do it because, like I said, this is like 94, so I was just hearing about surface piercings. And like I said, everything went fine. I was like, you know, can you move your feet? He moved his feet, and I was like, cool, okay. But, yeah, with that, like he said, for the first couple of days with his arm, moving his arms was a little sore. Like, he couldn't do jumping jacks for a couple of days.
Right.
But other than that, actually, after like two or three days, he was fine. Everything worked out great for him. They did get irritated at first because I did leave him like about 2 inches on each end. Not about an inch and a half on each end.
Was that just for cleaning?
So he can clean, so he can tilt his arm up and thoroughly move the monofilament up and down and get it out. But after that, after about a month and a half or 2 months of it, and he caught one of them since they were sticking out long, and I ended up trimming him up a little bit. But he hasn't had any problems at all. And he said about every 3 days, like when he wakes up, he'll have, like, you know, a lot of discharge on his chest when he wakes up. But other than that, he hasn't had any problems.
What's it's been a year, year and a half now?
It's been about 9 months.
9 months?
Yeah.
I guess it's impossible to tell how long it'll take for them to fully heal, if they ever will.
I wouldn't even guess. I would definitely say, like, more than a year.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anyone, really, that's tried other than the tongue, I don't think there's anyone that's tried any real deep muscle piercings.
Yeah, well, I had a friend of mine who actually performs in wax with me, Shane. After he saw my pictures, he ended up doing the same piercing on this chick that he did, like, 30-some piercings. He was like within a month, like service piercings. He did them on her too.
Mm-hmm.
The same, like.
She still have them?
Collarbones. I don't know. I know she lost like a few of her surface piercings because like too many in too short a time, but.
But she's still alive.
Yeah, she's still alive.
All right. Now the other this client of yours has also got a I guess a deep oral piercing or whatever you want to call it. Tell me about that piercing. What is that?
That's the one going underneath the tongue and straight out his lower part of his chin.
What all does that pass through?
Just a muscle. It's just like sponge, almost like an apelang.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a sponge in there. It splits off almost like a tongue. There's like a right side and a left side, and there's like a little passageway in the center. Not so much like a passageway, but where they like meet together.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's actually, I've done that one a couple times, but the first one I did was on the same guy I did the collarbones on, and that one's given no problems at all from day one. I have monofilament in that one on him too.
That's another one that surprised me that it healed, but I've seen quite a few of them on people. They seem to sort of, you know, they seem to seep a little bit forever, but never any real problems.
Yeah.
When someone comes to you and asks for these, these more heavy duty piercings, how do you assess whether they're whether you want to do it?
Depends on the person. Like, people come up to me all the time. Well, not all the time, but people come up to me and say, oh, you know, I want this, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, if they come to me like an asshole, then they're not, like, you know, they have to show me that they have something inside that they really want, you know, like a special piercing like this, or like a deep piercing, or even like certain surface piercings I won't just do on anybody. It has to be like the right person.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't do stuff for pictures. I like to do stuff for long term. Like there's a lot of people, like, I don't know about around, like, I know around here, but I don't know about like everybody else, but there's people who just pierce just to have. They'll do like a bunch of crazy piercings. They're like, oh yeah, I did like, you know, 13 in this dude's neck, but 2-3 weeks later they're grown out or they're all infected and they're all scarred up, and the person's coming to me, and they're like, oh, can you do something with this? But I'd rather do stuff for long term.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, let's see, do you have you done other deep piercings, or are those the two real deep ones?
I've done, like, deep rib piercing, not rib, but, like, sides, and backs and legs and stomach.
But those are just surface piercings.
But, yeah.
Right.
But as far as, like, the major deep ones, those two would probably be the main ones.
Mm-hmm. And do you have plans for any new ones, or is that...
I have a couple ideas, a couple secrets that
They're secrets, though, or can we say them, and then if people want them, they can volunteer and come to you, or...?
They're secrets. I want to surprise BMA.
Excellent.
I want to put them up there so like you put captions on the underneath going like holy shit.
Well, that's pretty much what I did with the collarbone one.
Yeah.
I said don't try this, you know.
Yeah, I definitely don't suggest that piercing for anybody or even to attempt to do it. Kind of like in the same aspect as like John Cobb with the uvula.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a cool piercing. It looks good. People freak out when they come to my shop, but don't attempt that at home, please.
For sure. Does that mean you have uvula piercing, or?
No, I don't have mine.
Mm-hmm.
I have everything made up for mine. I made all the special tools and all, and they've been sitting in my shop for about a year and a half now.
You gotta work yourself up to doing it, or?
I don't know. Because every now and then, when I'm sleeping, I'll snore, and my uvula ends up swelling up from snoring or something, and it's like touching my tongue, and I'm like, damn, if I have a ring on there, going to be touching my tongue even more.
Yeah, that'd drive you crazy.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the gag reflex, and I've seen some good ones and I've seen some really shitty ones. I don't know. No, but people have come to me and I've actually turned them away. You only because, like I was saying before, they weren't, like, the right person.
Yeah, I've had mine pierced twice now, and it was a fiasco both times. The first time, we had done so many practice runs. We were using a fixed bead ring, and by the end of it, we didn't notice this, but the fixed bead ring wasn't closing 100%. There's, like, a paper-thin gap. And as you know, if you've ever tried to clamp a uvula,
yeah,
it clamps to nothing. I mean, literally paper-thin.
Yep.
So, you know, we did the piercing, both me and Tom, were sweating heavily. Like, this is the most traumatic piercing we've ever done, right? We don't know what to expect. You know, even though we've done tons of practice runs, we get it all finished, rings in, closed, everything looks perfect, you know, and we leave the shop. We're walking down the street, and I'm like, I don't think it's there anymore. And I'd swallowed it, like, 10 minutes after we did it. And then the second time was even worse, right? I made this... I was working as a jeweler at the time, and I made this just gorgeous, gorgeous little 14-gauge, 3/8-inch titanium circular barbell.
Mm-hmm.
Just beautiful piece of jewelry. Clamp, needle goes through, feed the jewelry through, go to take the clamp off, beads are too big. They don't fit through the clamp. So that was that, and we just never did it again after that. Anyway.
Did that bleed a lot?
It didn't bleed at all.
I figured it wouldn't.
No. You kind of feel like you have a sore throat for a couple weeks later. That's it.
Hey.
It's a surprisingly simple. And at least in my experience, I have no nerves whatsoever in my uvula. So as long as you don't tap the tap the tongue or the back of the throat, there's not even any gagging problems.
Huh.
And we used an oral xylocaine, sort of gargled with it.
Uh-huh.
Totally numbed everything back there.
Yeah, because I talked to John a few times about it, and he was, like, going through his experience with me and doing it and all, and I still haven't seen his video, though. I'm still waiting to see that from him.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm going to play another song. When we come back, we want to talk about sort of the role of piercer as researcher and how clients fit into that. So we'll be back in 4 minutes.
Pictures.
We're back with Mark here. Now, Mark, I wanted to ask you. Most piercers, you know, sort of stick to that that basic, you know, basic 15 piercings. But you know, there's a couple of piercers, yourself included, that you know, really are responsible for you know, constantly you know, taking piercing a step further, constantly figuring out new ways that the art form can be expanded. What role do you think that the piercer has as researcher?
I think a lot of role. I mean, I take feedback from other, like, clients who come in and they, like, want different ideas, but I have this little sketchbook I keep of drawings of, like, the human anatomy and, like, different ones. Like I was saying, like, I had a couple secrets that's coming, but, like, different, like, ones I want to try on people and, you know, see how they are and adjust. But knowing, like, what the client wants is, like, my main goal and making them happy.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's easy for tattoo artists to express themselves on an artistic level. Is new piercings a way that a piercer can do that?
Yeah, I mean, you can only, like, you do a belly, you do a belly. You do it as best as you can. I mean, I think, like, every piercing is an art form. If it is just a belly or an eyebrow, I mean, you're expressing different views and different feelings of the person getting it done. But that's another reason why I like doing surface piercing so much, and that's, like, the main thing I do at my shop. Me personally, like, my other piercers do a lot of the art stuff, but most of the hardcore surface stuff and all is mainly done by me, because when people walk around with, like, you know, like 10 different surface piercings on their stomach, like, shaped as, like, a star or something, then it's like, you know, it's an art form to me. And people look at them like, oh, wow. I mean, you see a belly, you're like, oh, you know, you got your belly pierced or something. I mean, not knocking bellies. You know, I love doing bellies. They're fun. But, you know, when people walk around with, like, you know, their temples pierced or something, people are like, wow. You know, they're more amazed, kind of like if you see, like, a big, colorful back piece. You know, there's a lot of time and effort go into piercings, a little more than what I think people think actually does. A lot of people think it's just, you know, you're stabbing a needle through somebody, no big deal. It doesn't take any, like, skill level. But there's an art form, and there is a skill level.
So I think I'm hearing a little kid in the background?
Yeah, it's my 2-year-old Joey.
And now you're saying that you got a 2-year-old, you have, you know, a wife, you have a house in the suburbs. That sounds a bit unusual for a piercer.
Yeah, it's I live in a little suburban neighborhood, and I'm living in a house I grew up in. It's just, you can make a good living out of being a piercer. I mean, I don't do it for the money. Like I said, I turn people down all the time for some stuff I don't want to do. But I've been doing it for 6 years now, and I'm planning on opening up a second shop, actually, in a couple of months. Running 2 shops, and I have 4 people working for me, and 2 more apprentices probably starting soon.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were saying that there's sort of a funny way that you pick your apprentices, or that you screen your apprentices.
Yeah, well, they got to be. I like them to be clients of mine. Only because I like to know the people who are working for me. Like, because same thing with the creations as with, like, my shop. We're all just it's like a big family. I don't like to hire just, like, strangers off the street, because who knows what they know, or who knows, like, their background or what they're gonna do and stuff like that. Plus, with my shop's a complete straight edge shop.
And let me just, I think most of the younger people listening to this will know what that is, but do you want to just tell everyone what that means?
Yeah, it's, you can't drink, can't do drugs, can't smoke, just got to have a clean life and a positive life. I've learned that having other people, not knocking people who drink, because my wife drinks, my wife smokes cigarettes.
Hey, I'm drinking right now.
Yeah. There you go, see, 11 o'clock in the morning.
I'm drinking both a beer and a coffee at the same time.
There you go. I need something to a chaser.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, like I said, I'm not knocking it. I go to clubs and bars all the time to hang out. I don't knock it, but it's just not my thing. And I was actually asked to pierce at Woodstock, my shop, and Secretions. And I took on a couple of people who weren't straight edge just because I needed more people to work for me. And those people, they did their things, and, you know, like I said, I'm not knocking them, but I couldn't count on them. And everybody from my shop who was straight edge was 110% there for me, and the other people were there like 30%.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something I feel it's more comfortable and makes the customers feel a little more safe when they come in. They see like freaks. They're like, "Oh my God, you guys are like disgusting." Like I had an actual mom saying that I'm disgusting looking, but yet she's bringing her daughter for me to, you know, actually just like stab. I'm like, "Well, you know, you're trusting me a little bit." But then after she's seen, like, I had actually, this is how hardcore I am. I had Steve do an implant on my forearm underneath my straight edge tattoo. He did a 2-gauge X. It was like the first cross section implant he ever did.
That's cool. Yeah.
And people like see my implants and all in my ears, and then they're like, "Oh, what are all the X's on you for?" And I explain the whole thing. Then like all of a sudden, their moms are not like, "Oh, you're a freak." They're kind of like, "Oh, really? You don't do drugs? I thought you did." You know, because I mean, I'm sure you get it. Like, you know, ooh, when people see your piercings, they're like, "Oh man, you had to be so fucked up to get that." But you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of like a safer mind thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that I mean,
I have to add, my kid's ear is pierced.
Did you pierce it?
Yep, with a needle. He has a 14-gauge 3/8 catheter ring in it. I did it when he was like 11 months old.
I guess it's quite likely that your kid won't want piercings or tattoos because kids don't usually emulate their parents. But
I've noticed going to conventions that sometimes they don't. But my kids, I mean, with my lifestyle of, I can almost guarantee my kids going to be into something I'm in, because I build like low rider cars and trucks and all and bikes and. So either every weekend we're going to like a tattoo convention or a car show or, you know, something of that sort. And he's going to be surrounded by it. So I don't know, like, if he's not into it, I'm not going to knock him for it. I mean, he can grow up to be whatever he wants. But I'd love for him to like grow up and take over my business. But I think that he's actually going to be into it because he loves seeing piercings.
You'd be the Lou family of piercing.
Yeah.
Now, you were saying you go to the lowrider shows. I see that a lot. A lot of piercers are into that. Why do you think there's an overlap there? What's similar between those two art forms?
I don't know. I've been in the lowriders for about 13 years now. I've been building them. And just, I don't know, just ended up falling together, I guess. I mean, you got the tattooed rockabilly draw into like the street rods, which actually I'm into too. But it all falls into the same, I think. It's just, I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't really know a reason why. I go to some lowrider shows, and I have a booth there setting up piercing there, and I don't even get to see the show. That's how like busy I am there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. The next thing, Mark, I want to ask you about is, and I when I first called you, I'd totally forgotten that you were even involved in this, but the Wax Performance Group.
Mm-hmm.
Let's quickly, you can tell us what that is, then we'll take a quick song break, and then we'll go more in depth about that.
Well, Wax is a performance group of three of us, me, Bob Marker, who owns Mantis Acrylic, and Shane Muntz, who tattoos and pierces at Norristown Tattoo. It's just a performance group where we do suspensions, bed of nails, human crucifix, pincushion acts, you know, such as that. And we've been, like, you know, we've had a lot of write-ups in magazines and all, and we've opened up for Guar and Jenna Tortures and other, like, local bands and fetish balls we do all the time. It's just another thing I do on the weekend besides car shows and conventions.
Yeah. All right, well, this is Daniel Johnson's Circus Man.
If I was a circus man, then I'd be a circus man. Only you could understand. All my life ahead of me, that's the way it ought to be. Circus, take me away. Wonder where I've been again, then I'll be back again. See a brand new day. See the girly on TV wonder if she could see me. Buy the funny magazines of talk. It's a secret part of me, secret identity. Love to love my honey all night long. Take a walk around the block, see the future of the clock. No good in forgetting. If I was a circus man, only you would understand. There's a story there to tell. See your brother burn in hell.
All right, we're back. Now, I was just thinking about the various photos that are in the wax gallery, and I guess while people are listening to this, they can flip on over through that. One of the craziest photos I remember from wax is a suspension. Now, most suspensions are done using 10-gauge or 8-gauge hooks, probably, but this is like a double zero-gauge, just monstrous single hook in the middle of a guy's back. What was that all about, Mark?
Well, that was at a tattoo convention up in North PA, and that was done on Shane, and he was going for the Guinness Book of World Records for single-hook suspension. But instead of starting off with multi-hooks and cutting down and going to one hook, he just started with just one hook. And that was an experience in itself, trying to pierce into his back, because I actually did the piercing, and I pierced him with a 4-gauge, then stretched him to a 2-gauge, then to a 0, then to a 00.
Jesus,
then I'm trying to wedge in
a
huge meat hook.
That was a meat hook?
It was actually from a butcher supply company.
And then what, you winched him up and added weights, or what did you do to him?
Nah, I just hooked him up and lifted him up, and he held there for, I think, 3 minutes and 7 seconds.
Man, I think with a hook that big, you could probably hang 400 or 500 pounds off of him, and it's not going to tear through.
He had a 00, and he had a half inch, and I was like, looking at the half inch, I'm like, dude, what do you want me to just like scalpel this into your back? I was like, there's no way. And it took me like a good 3 to 4 minutes to actually push in the 00 gauge hook.
Mm-hmm.
It was, put it this way, I did a suspension about 2 hours earlier than that, and I had the holes in my arm were like, you know, dried up. And when I was pushing the hook in, I actually busted those open, and like blood was like dripping down. I'm like, dude, you're bleeding. But here it was from me.
Now you said that was for Guinness. I think the TSD has done similar things. This sort of building larger and larger performances, you know, crazier and crazier stuff. Is there this, among these performance groups, is there sort of a one-upmanship? You know, you want to just keep taking it farther and farther?
I guess there is a little, but, like, I'm friends, like, I talk to, like, people from, like, other groups, like TSD and all, and we're friends, and I've actually shared ideas with other people, and they did the same with us. I would love to actually to get together. That's why I wanted to come to ModCon, but it was my kid's birthday. But to like get together and do like a huge, have like almost like an Ozfest, but like of suspension people and performance groups, just to get together and have like a big festival like that.
Let me tell you, I'll just briefly interject, and I probably shouldn't give this sort of information away on BME Radio, but next year's ModCon, the space we're looking at is this sort of old bombed out factory. And the ModCon itself will be on the top story, probably 150 feet up. And everything underneath is like these old grain towers. So if we can get that space, there'll be a massive, massive suspension performance.
Nice.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt your story.
Nah, just don't have it around June 25th.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
That was the only reason I couldn't come this year. I mean, you invited me in on, I was like, yeah, cool, and I was like, oh, shit. Because I was talking to Sean at the Philadelphia convention, and he was like, I'm not sure which weekend it is, and he was like, I think it's the last weekend of June. I was like, damn.
Yeah, we scheduled it around the Toronto's got a huge gay pride parade that weekend. So that's what we put it on. Anyway, what are some of the other things that Wax does?
Like the one that I'm most famous for, not most famous for, but the one everybody always sees and gets freaked out is like when I do my human pincushion act, which to the people who like are listening to this and everything else, they understand that it's not that bad, but it just freaks regular people. Well, I guess regular, but like, you know, the normal mainstream people when they see like a picture of me looking like T.G. Allen over here just doing like the pincushion. But we've done a pincushion, we've done like the seesaw suspensions of like, you know, two people on each end swinging right around. We want to actually do, which is probably letting something out and somebody else will probably do it before us.
ICU is going to do it.
Huh?
Yeah, ICU is going to do it.
Is the Battle Dome type Battle Dome type thing where it's like the two people like swing together.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do something like that with like people only like, doing on suspension. So
yeah, that'd be excellent. which of the Wax performances, which is the one that you're most proud of? Or is it sort of a single, constantly evolving stream of performance?
Yeah, I mean, they're all great. The last one wasn't great. The last one, I made up a new rig for me out of aluminum, so it's like aluminum cross, and I used chains instead of rope this time, and the chains that were on my thigh were on the eye hook too far forward, so when I was like lifted up, all the weight was just on like my thighs, and I only held for like, I only suspended for like 40 seconds, and I was like, put me down, it's hurting too much, because, I mean, I'm not like the skinniest guy in the world, I'm like the fat ass of the group. But other than that, I mean, they're all great. I mean, Paul Booth asked us to come to his bloodlet party he had, the Bloodfest, and we performed there, and in front of like a huge crowd there, and that was great. But I don't know, like I said, we've opened up for Gwar, and the fans are kind of weird with that because, you know, it's not their type of thing. But it's just getting the reactions. I mean, if we can make a person pass out or throw up, then we've done a good performance. And it's odd because more guys pass out at our shows than girls.
No, not that he's dead yet, but Fakir is rolling over in his grave hearing that.
Yeah, I know. Because, I mean, I love what Fakir does, but, I mean, our thing's kind of like, it's a shock thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do it for the spiritual part of it, too. I mean, I've done, like, you know, out in the woods suspensions, but a lot of times we're doing them at fetish balls where people are looking to see, you know, extreme stuff like flying around and fire and stuff like that. It's funny because we are actually supposed to perform for this local wrestling federation called CZW who do, like, extreme more than anything else in America. You'll see like barbed wire, fire, and all that exploding stuff, and we were supposed to perform for them, and they put us up on their webpage, and the crowd wasn't into it, and I was like, oh, what, we're too extreme for like wrestling? But it was weird how like the crowd, they didn't want to see it, but it's like the same thing they're watching.
Yeah, sort of. I'd be very surprised if the two of them went together. Although, you know, not that I watch wrestling a lot, but even the mainstream wrestling, I'm surprised at how, you know, there's goth wrestlers and, you know, this sort of moving away from just a sort of a weird jock subculture, jock white trash subculture in wrestling.
Oh, yeah, there's everything. I mean, especially with, like, the Prince Albert and, like, WWF, who's, mm-hmm. like, supposedly up here, so yada yada yada. But I mean, that's just like cheesy. But there's like a lot of piercers, a lot of wrestlers out there who have like extreme. Actually, my one piercer is training to be a wrestler.
Well, listen, who was it? Who was the piercer with the or the wrestler with the cheek piercing? This was way back, like in like the 80s.
I'm sorry, I missed that last part.
In the 80s, who was the wrestler that had the had a cheek piercing, and not a cheek piercing, but a cheek surface piercing? I don't know if you remember that.
I'm trying to think.
Because it was way back. I mean, this would have been when we were kids, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, that was
Lou Albano.
Was it him?
who had who wore rubber bands through his cheeks?
No. This guy had like a surface piercing. A surface piercing, like an anti-eyebrow or a surface piercing.
Huh.
Because when I first got my anti-eyebrow, people said, oh, you're like that wrestler guy. you know? And that was in the 80s, you know? That was way, way back.
Yeah.
You know? That was before there were really piercing studios. So it was pretty strange. You know, it's weird, you know, if you look at that and then you look at, like, Madison as well, there were these strange pioneers of extreme piercing that I don't think really get recognition.
Oh yeah, no.
You know, even though they were totally public, you know.
Yep.
I guess the other things they were doing sort of overshadowed overshadowed the piercing. Let's see. Let's talk a bit about the relationship between when I talked to Alan in his interview, we talked about it too, but I wanted to get your views on it also. What is it like taking an inherently sort of spiritual act and, I don't know if dumbing it down is the right word, but dumbing it down for public performance and, you know, taking everything that, you know, what some people would say, taking everything of value out of it and, you know, presenting it as something else?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of exploiting it a little, but I don't know, it's just, it's weird. There's like two different styles. One's more extreme, one's more spiritual.
Mm-hmm. And you've tried both.
Yeah.
Do you think that what effect does it have on the public when they see it in the form that it appears in public? Do you think that it then draws them towards it, and you know, opens their eyes, or do you think it just makes them look at it all as a big freak show?
I get both, because, like, in my shop, I have portfolios of wax and I have portfolios of my piercings. But, I mean, it's like a 50-50. Like, some parents and some people look at it and be like, oh my god, it's sick. And some people actually, like, totally shock me. And they're like, these older adults who are, like, you know, white collar people, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, that's like a man called horse. I was like, yeah. And I'm like all shocked that, like, these people, like, know, like, and seen, like, stuff before. But now, like, since, like, TSD's been on, like, Guinness and all that, and they're like, oh, I saw stuff on TV, blah, blah, blah. But it seems like more and more people are accepting it, but you'll still have your people that are, like, totally disgusted by it.
Mm-hmm. And,
But I have people, like, that call me up at the shop that are like, yo, can you talk to me more about the suspensions? I'd like to do one, and, you know.
Does it surprise you that the public has, you know, even in the sideshow aspect of it, does it surprise you the public has picked up on this so heavily? You know, when even just a few years ago, there's no way you would have gotten any of this stuff on TV.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me because there's so much out there, and it's so much, like, put into your face that it's slowly being accepted. Just kind of like how, like, belly button piercings are okay now, as, you know, you're not a freak if you have your belly button pierced because, you know, society has accepted it, which, I mean, society sucks. I always had that argument with my mom because my mom's always worried about, and like, oh, people are going to talk about you. I'm like, Mom, do you love me for me? She's like, yeah. I'm like, well, then don't worry what people say. You know, I'm still the same person. I mean, society has, like, you know, everybody's mind's warped that, you know, this is okay and this is not okay, so, you know, you're supposed to believe this. But, I mean, it's just, now it's like, it's becoming so open and everybody's starting to, like, accept it, which is kind of good, but it's still far from, like, everything being accepted. Like, I don't think actually it ever will be. Like, the service piercings now, people come in and are like, oh, you know, that's stupid, I don't understand that, why would you do that? I can understand piercing your belly button, but why would you want to, you know, pierce your ass cheek or something?
Which seems bizarre, you know, I'm sure it seems bizarre to you that someone would make a statement like that. It seems certainly bizarre to me that someone would say, oh, it's all right for me to get my navel pierced, or it's okay for me to get my tongue pierced, but, geez, that little surface piercing, what kind of sicko does that?
Yeah.
The tongue piercing is a pretty radical procedure when you look at it on a medical level.
Definitely.
You know, certainly more than a little surface piercing, which really, you know, from an anatomical level, is really no big deal. It's
I mean, and I have, like, I had this one mom that was in back when I was in the tattoo shop who was arguing with me about piercings, and she was there signing for her 16-year-old kid to get a tattoo. And she's like, he can get anything he wants tattooed, but he's not allowed to have any piercings. And I was like, why? tattoos are permanent, piercings aren't. You can take them out and you might have like a tiny scar. She's like, it's just not right. And I was like, oh, so if your kid wants to have like, you know, Satan rules tattooed across his chest, that's okay. And she's like, yeah. I was like, okay, you're just an idiot and I don't really feel like talking to you.
Yeah. Now I'll rewind a long way here. You said that when you first got into this, you were only interested in piercing and you didn't think you'd ever get tattoos done. Why did piercing draw you specifically rather than tattoos?
I don't know. Like I've seen National Geographic like when I was younger and I was amazed at the earlobes, and it was so funny because I was like, man, I'd love to have earlobes like that, but there's no way I'll ever get earlobes like that. And now I have, like, you know, 2-inch earlobes. But, I don't know, just, I guess the whole, with the piercings, you can take them out. See, back when I was younger, I was still worried about what people would say, because I had, like, you know, a normal job in a bike shop, and I had, like, you know, sorry about that. you know, normal job, and I was still worried about, like, what people thought until, you know, but, I always looked at, like, piercings. I can always just take them out. And I don't have to worry about what other people say because, you know, they'll be out and I won't have any marks. Tattoos are just too permanent.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got tattooed, I mean, I'm, like, covered a good amount now.
And did you realize sort of that it doesn't matter or why?
Yeah. Because, I don't know, I guess, like, before you know the tattoo and piercing industry people, like, if you look at them, they're scary people. I mean, if you're like an average person, yada yada, whatever that is. But if you look at like if you look at me, people are scared of me. But I mean, I guess I had that same thing, and I was like, no, ooh, I don't be associated with that. But once I got tattooed, and I went to a convention in Cherry Hill, in Jersey, and I just like saw the people, I met the people, and they're actually more nice than any person I've met in any other industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the. I just. We went for our honeymoon to the Julie Moon Hedonism Convention.
Right. That's the one in Jamaica?
Yeah. We're going back this year. That's how good it was. But it's just seeing, like, all these people just relaxing, naked, and, you know, just chilling. It's just. I'd have to say, I mean, I've been in a lot of different industries, and I would have to say the tattoo and piercing industry have the nicest people and the most, I don't know what to say, the most diverse people of like all different cultures. I mean, the people who were at the event weren't just, and people who go to conventions, they're not just tattoo artists and piercers. They're doctors, lawyers, they're like all these people. And it's just, I don't know, it's a great thing. That's why I'm so glad to be in this industry. And my wife's not in the industry. She works for a collection agency. She has like, you know, a 9-to-5 job. But I keep her wild with having me in this industry. I mean, she still has all her piercings. She's the one who has like her forehead pierced that I sent in. And I mean, she has like a bunch of piercings and all, but she still keeps them in for her work. But she has like her regular job, and I'm like the wild side of the relationship.
Yeah. I think actually I there's a picture of the two of you on BME.
Yeah.
So
we're just in Taboo.
Oh, okay.
She was showing up her portrait of me. It's a portrait of my face around her vagina.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. Hey, it won us a free trip back to Jamaica.
That's not so bad, yeah. All right, listen, Mark, we're basically out of time here. Let's tell people how they can get in touch with you.
You can visit my webpage for either Wax or for Inner Soul at www.innersoul.da.ru, and same thing for Wax. It's wax.da.ru. It's a Russian site. It's free. I'm cheap. Leave me alone. That or, you know, the internet's the easiest way because it has my email address on there and everything else. But, yeah, my shop's in Jersey, so.
Excellent. Well, I guess we'll be excitedly waiting to see what these new piercings are. Hopefully, we'll see those in the next 6 months or something.
Hoping.
Let's hope so. Excellent. And if people want some exciting things done, they can get in touch with you through the website or at your shop in Jersey. And thanks a lot for talking to us, Mark.
Thank you.
You will be safe. You will be asleep. Someone will have their hand running through your hair. The world is full of images. Some of them will be transparent. Ghosts, they're only catch on video frames. You will be safe in the dark. You will be warm at night when the windows open. You will be loved. You're remembered.